Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 195 with the title, Bridging Silent Worlds. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Maria Gallucci. Maria is a multi-award winning realtor. Child Coder stands for Child of Deaf Adults, and author of Raised in Silence. She also builds accessible home buying experiences and championing empathy between deaf and hearing communities. And when I asked Maria to describe herself, she said that it is radical empathy that bridges deaf and hearing worlds. Hello, Maria. Welcome to the show. Absolute pleasure, absolute pleasure. And we were chatting in the green room before we went live about your ancestry. Where are you from and where do you descend from in the past?
So I'm Italian and we live in Denver, Colorado now, but we're second generation Italians in the United States. And I was born in New Hampshire, but basically raised in Colorado.
Because we were talking about how the pronunciation of your name is people see the C's and they pronounce it kind of an American way, but not in the Italian way. So Gallucci, so ch. Is the C.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone always just did Gallucci, which it's actually Gallucci.
Yeah. That's really, yeah. And I was wondering the other day, you know, the historical character Julius Caesar, should he be really Julius Caesar?
Yeah, that's true.
I always wondered, but yeah, that would rewrite history books the world over.
Yeah, have to redo all the class stuff that we learned.
Yeah, Hail Caesar and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so it's, yeah, I always wondered that, but. So, Maria, you, as I said in the intro, you're the child of deaf adults, and you grew up in a world where silence was the norm for them, but obviously you're a hearing child. That must have been a challenge because you must have also had to be their sign interpreter or their interpreter from the hearing to the non-hearing world.
Yeah, we were always the gap between the hearing and the non-hearing world. And so we always had to interpret for their medical appointments or any financial things. And there's six of us kids and we're all hearing and both of our parents were deaf. So ASL was our first language. And then my mom always said we learned how to speak through the TV and obviously school and things like that. So ASL is all we've known since we were kids.
ASL as American Sign Language.
Yes, American Sign Language. Every country has their own signs.
Like, because it's not a universal language. You don't translate, do you? It's a completely independent language.
Yes, yep. And we always say things, we reverse things, like Spanish, how they do the reversal. That's how we sign as well, where English is the different.
So ASL and BSL, different syntax and context, is it?
Yes, yeah, it's different. Like in, I think my mom always said in the Philippines, I think it was, they would actually like use their hands to do signs, like their bodies to do the signs, where in ASL we do it with our hands.
Wow. So there's no universal sign language.
No, but everyone has their own. It's like having accents too.
Yeah, wow. So different parts of the country have different signs for different words, do they?
Yes. Yep. They do. It's completely different.
That must be tricky to learn, I guess, as a non-native or a non child growing up with signing, so you have to learn it. But if you're traveling around the country, you have to learn that there's different dialects as well. Were your parents ever hearing, or were they born without hearing?
So my dad was born deaf, and then my mom became deaf at 9 months because she had, I think it was the measles and the mumps at the same time when she was 9 months. So she was raised deaf, but she was actually not born deaf. And all of us six kids are hearing, so none of us were deaf.
Okay. So I've got a friend who has cochlear implants, and she lost her hearing probably in the childhood, so I think 5 or 6 years old. So she had a few years of hearing, which makes the cochlear implants easier to process because she knows what hearing is. But it must be extremely difficult for maybe both your parents because they've never heard. It's such an integral part of my experience. How could I describe something without ever having heard something?
Yes, I agree. I agree with that because back then they had, it wasn't the implants, but it was something else that they had that they put on their ear. Like they've come advanced on that stuff. And my mom, they never wore hearing aids. It gave her migraines. So she always like took off the hearing aids. So I think that when you're born deaf, it is different because you've never heard. And so a lot of people struggle with like headaches and things like that when they put the implants in or even use the hearing aids.
Are your parents proud of their deafness? It's part of their identity. It's not just they don't see it as a disability. It's more that they're proud to be deaf.
Yes, exactly. And I'm proud to be a CODA. It gives you a different perspective on people and being inclusive and things like that.
Yeah, I've heard that before, but it's like other disabilities or conditions where people don't feel they need to be fixed. They're perfectly okay as they are, and they're not broken. They don't need someone to come and fix them. They just are.
Yeah, they're being their authentic self. They don't feel like they're anything different than who they are.
So what challenge did you face as a child growing up in this world? Were you the oldest of your siblings or in the middle there somewhere?
I'm in the middle. Yeah, so I'm the third to the oldest. Yeah. And so I think it was just having people making them feel different than they are, not accepted, and seeing my parents be like, or we, all of us being made fun of because we signed or because our parents didn't, you know, talk. So I think that it gave us more empathy towards people and communities. And I think that being raised with deaf parents gives you a different perspective on how you treat others.
So if you were in the middle of your siblings, you had the advantage of having older brothers or sisters to interface before you, if you like. So your oldest sibling must have had the biggest challenge of being the interface.
Yeah, and what's strange is I was always the main person with my parents I went to, yeah. So, and I don't know how that ended up coming about, but yeah, I was the main one that always helped to interpret when I was little and help them get through things with like the medical appointments and things like that, where you have to actually be there for them to help them, guide them.
So that must have been quite a weight of responsibility to being a young person and being the primary, I suppose, carer in certain situations.
Yeah. And I think that's why seeing my parents get taken advantage of a lot. And I always promised myself, even when I was younger, that I will never, ever let anybody feel left out or not included or feel not seen. And so that was always my mission ever since I was little.
One thing I've heard other deaf people tell me is that when you have an interpreter, it's really important to speak to the person, not to the interpreter, because sometimes people will talk to the person doing the interpreting, not to the person you're trying to. That's quite an insult, really, isn't it? You're almost cutting them out.
Yeah, exactly. And that is so true, because when we do our closings, a lot of the times the closer will actually talk to the interpreter, and then my client will be like, no, you need to talk to me directly. And then because you make it seem like the interpreter's not there. And then so when we do the video phones, like the relay, we also are talking to them as if we're talking to the person. So you always talk to them and face them instead of the interpreter. And even with like sign language, and ASL is very expressive. And that's how, because, you know, with our voices, we can do emotion. And so with sign language, we do it with our expressions and everything. And so even with, yeah, exactly. And I still do that. I always move my hands even when I'm talking. Well, and I'm Italian, so maybe that has something to do with that.
That's Italian.
Yeah, exactly. But we can't, it's hard for me to talk to people if they have sunglasses on. And so because I have to see them and I have to like see their expressions on their faces. So yeah, I think looking at someone is very important. And even not in just ASL, I think just communication in general, you should always just look at the person so they can feel like seen and heard.
I found that I used to go to networking meetings quite often in my business. And the number of times you check someone's hand and they'd look away from you or they start talking over here. And I developed a technique where you don't let go of their hand until they look at you. So they're sort of trying to shake your hand and they're moving on. You just hold their hand. Yeah. And they go, oh, thank you. Now we're talking.
Yeah. You've seen me. Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't let go. And it really confuses them.
I'm going to start doing that from now on.
I was waiting for you to look at me. And then they realize how rude they've been by doing this as they walk off. Sorry, we're on video here. So if you're watching, what I'm doing is I'm doing this simulation shaking someone's hand. And what happens is sometimes people walk into a room and they don't look at you while they're shaking their hand. So I just visually was playing that out on camera. But if you're listening to this on the audio, you won't be able to see me. So I thought we'd better make that inclusive. If we're not careful, we'll talk about hearing, but also there's a sight issue here as well if you're only listening. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, people can.
I'm going to start doing that.
But people aren't doing it deliberately. They're just not focused, are they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just, I don't want to say self-absorbed, but they're not making, that's how a lot of people feel like excluded and not feel seen.
I mean, I don't know if it sounds strange or not, but I learned about this need to look at the person, not the interpreter. And I think it was an episode of Star Trek Next Generation where one of the species or the characters couldn't hear. And they always had an interpreter with them. And I think Jean-Luc Picard or Riker or something kept looking at the interpreter. And they said, no, look at the king, look at the emperor or something. It's like, it stuck with me. And that was, like, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years ago when I was watching that.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, and that happens a lot, actually, a lot. So yeah. I have to like judge up and say, make sure you're talking to the client. Like, just pretend like the interpreter's not there. All she's doing is just interpreting.
Yeah, I've been in situations where there's been some deaf people and the interpreters in around. And because you consciously don't focus on the interpreter, it almost feels rude that you almost want to say, I see you as well. But there's often such in the background, and the protocol is talk to the person, not to the interpreter. But I just feel that the interpreter sometimes feels like a spare part in the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like,
I was feeling embarrassed for not talking to them. I go after and say, just want to say, I see you as well.
Yeah, exactly. Just say hi. I see you. Thank you so much for interpreting.
Yeah.
And then go back. Yeah.
Otherwise, they're almost like a utility piece in the background. I don't know if you find that. Sometimes you're just in the background and no one ever acknowledges you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I feel like a lot of us growing up was for my parents. And so because they do get excluded because people don't want to try to communicate with them. Or if they think that they can't communicate, they'll just shut them aside instead of just trying with them.
Did you ever have to deal with people asking silly questions like, can't they have hearing aids or why don't they have cochlear implants or can they have a surgery or can they be fixed? Do you have to fend off questions like that often?
Oh, yes, a lot when we were kids. Like, why can't they talk normal? And then, like, asking about the hearing aids. And then the other one is, does it feel, or how was it like growing up with deaf parents? And then I'm like, well, how was it like growing up with hearing parents? Like, it's our normal. So it's the same thing. But yeah, no, we got stared at a lot. And I still am, like, self-conscious even now, like, getting stared at. And so I think that, and sign language is beautiful too. Like if you just, I mean, to be able to speak with your hands is, I think, absolutely amazing. And to be able to do stuff in words. And I think a lot of people maybe take that not for granted, but like not really knowing that or what it is and always look at it as something different, but it's not. We're just communicating just in a different language.
Are you, one of your superpowers, I guess, is you can communicate across a room in silence, can't you?
Yes.
You can have a conversation 20 feet apart in silence.
Yeah, so exactly. If my sisters or my brothers are like down like the room, I can sign if I needed them to go grab me something, or if we're like a long line at the restaurant, I can tell them, can you get me a drink? And we can communicate way across the room.
Could do it. Either of your parents actually verbalize at all, or they're nonverbal, or they try and speak?
So my dad was nonverbal. He barely ever spoke. I probably have heard him say maybe two things his entire life, but my mom did speak. So she, and I don't know if it's because she was born hearing that made the difference. So I've always wondered that, but yeah, my mom did speak. So we would know if we were in trouble.
I guess if she had, as you said, I think it was, you said 9 months or so before she lost her hearing. So she would have heard her father, her mother, her environment, those words. So she would have learned some words, I guess.
Yeah, she would learn some. But my mom didn't, like she would, like my name's Maria, but she would say Biwaka as my name. And so they don't know or my mom didn't know like what words sounded like. So it'd be like,
yes,
their words. But we understood it. And I can even understand accents, even heavy accents. And I think it's because I grew up with that, because you have to listen and try to figure out what they're saying. So for me, it's very easy to have different accents and things like that. I can understand it.
So it must have been a real challenge. And I don't want to sound like I'm being patronizing here, but it must have been a challenge for your parents to learn to get on in the world where hearing is taken for granted. Hearing also enables you speech. You learned how to read and write through audible language as well. How did your parents learn to read and write? I mean, it must have been a lot harder. Maybe reading might be easier, but they obviously hear different words in their head as they must recognize the word, but they don't know. They have a different way of processing that. When we read a book, we almost say it to ourselves, say the words out loud in our head sometimes.
I asked, it's funny that you said that, because I asked my mom one time. I had to do a high school like thesis and when I was graduating, and it was about dreams. And I had asked my mom and dad if they can hear in their dreams, and they said yes. And so I'm like, oh, that's like, and I thought that was so interesting. And then supposedly blind people can actually see in their dreams as well. So they did go to a deaf boarding school growing up. So then I think it's just teaching them how to read and write, because when you lose your hearing, you all your other senses heighten up too. So you like, you watch better, you.
And the gesticulations and the Italian and the Italianness of them.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest challenge in the world today for them? I mean, we've talked about a few things around acceptance, but I'd like to think the world is getting a better place than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's so advanced now. Like before, we didn't have like we have the video relay services now where you can see somebody on the video, and it's an interpreter on the other line, which we didn't have that back then. We had, it's called a TTY. So you just, it was like a little machine and you typed and then it would go to the other machine on the other end. But now there's a lot of apps that you can do now that will interpret, like you could just show it to them, and then texting. So I think that it's just awareness now and letting people know that they're just like us, like in the deaf and hard of hearing community is just like the hearing world. They just communicate in a different language.
So you used a phrase there, deaf and hard of hearing. What's the difference for those who are listening? When is someone deaf? When is someone hard of hearing? What's the difference?
So when you're deaf, you're like 100% deaf. So you can't really hear. And then hard of hearing is when you've like just lost some or most of your hearing. So the deaf culture is usually always deaf and hard of hearing, because they all go in one.
And so profoundly deaf means completely deaf, doesn't it?
Yes.
And the hard of hearing is a level of deafness that is not complete, but it's enough, more than, yeah, you put you into a different bracket. And then you've got hearing impaired or hard of hearing is a different category, is it?
Yeah, so they're hearing impaired and deaf and hard of hearing. They all, it just shows, or The difference I would say would be the percentage of what you're deaf. Because my dad was 100% deaf in both ears. And then my mom was like, I think she was like 95 in one and 90 in the other. So she was profoundly deaf. And so I think it just depends on the percentage, but the deaf and hard of hearing community is all lumped into the deaf culture.
Yeah. I've heard in the UK that someone who is profoundly deaf or completely deaf uses a capital D for their deafness, whereas people who are not profound or completely deaf use a lowercase d. Is that similar to the culture in America?
No, out here we do, so the deaf and hard of hearing, so the D is capitalized and then the H is capitalized and the other H for deaf and hard of hearing. That's if you're speaking about them, like the deaf and hard of hearing community, those would be capitalized.
Capitalized.
But then if you, yeah. And then if you do just the deaf culture, like that would be in lowercase.
Yeah. So it's a bit like capital B for black, but for someone's identity. It's reinforcing that. There's so many different nuances, isn't there, that an outsider of the community, if they're not aware of the culture of deafness, you are unaware of these little nuances that you've got to be careful of.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can say or do something that's actually very like insulting to the community. And so I think that's where like awareness comes in and just trying to learn about the culture. Or even if you see someone who's not hearing and they're trying to find something, go ahead and like tap on their shoulder and see if you can help them. Or because you can even put on your phone, like text it in your notes and just show it to them. Like, do you need any help?
Yeah, in modern technology, as you say, you've got these devices and apps now where it'll convert speech to text and even translate it into a different language as well.
Yeah,
it must have
exactly.
Radicalized and changed the whole experience.
Oh yeah, it's changed between my mom and her medical appointments when she had cancer to my dad 24 years later was completely different.
Mm.
So yeah, it's definitely advanced and still moving.
As a hearing person myself, my sort of go to entertainment is cinema, it's TV. Your parents probably didn't grow up in that kind of world, so. Are they big TV watchers? It's subtitles, or is that something that they just do something different instead?
Yeah, the closed captioning now. So we have, I think back like when I was little, I don't know if we had it when I was little, but it did like develop into closed caption. So now that's like everywhere. And then now they have like, before they didn't have interpreters at speaking events or the news or concerts, and now they do, which is amazing because it used to not have like any of that stuff back then.
Yeah, from what I see on the TV, America seems better at it than we are in the UK. The UK, we are getting better, but you know, things like the Super Bowl, all those sort of things, always have a signed interpreter in the corner, don't they? And the closed captioning is more rigorously enforced than I think it is here.
Yeah, it's definitely. And you can even now, like on YouTube or even Instagram and things like that, there's a button that you can press that'll actually translate what they're saying.
Yeah.
Into closed captioning. Yeah. So it's definitely more advanced now than it was.
Yeah. And in conferences and things like that, you could scan QR codes and it will link you through to the thing and you can get the transcription on your phone. So you can be sitting in the audience and they don't have to put it on all the boards. You can just sit on the phone and have your own private captioning.
You can just sit on the phone. Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely a lot better now than it was back then.
So you wrote this book called Raised in Silence, and that's the story of your journey for you. I mean, we talked a lot about your parents now, so let's talk a bit about you and your experience growing up and what prompted you to write the book?
I think when I was building, well, I've always wanted to make people feel included and not isolated. And I feel like I wanted to write about it to make people just aware of like the community. There's funny stories in there. There's tips in there on what to do and what not to do. And then I feel like there was a moment in my life when I realized I was building a successful career and watching people I cared about get like left out in the process. So I was doing very well in industry standards and everything, but I didn't feel like I was serving the community, and it's a very underserved community. So I think that's what shaped me. I think it made me seeing that at the end that my client, like before feeling invisible before like the ASL, and then just seeing them feel very included and happy, you know, buying their first home. And because that's a big life investment. And so not being able to understand what they're signing or what they're doing, I think that's why I wrote the book, is just for awareness and just make people feel included in all, like all communities, not just the deaf and hard of hearing community.
So which other communities do you work with? So accessibility, so someone who has a disability or someone who's blind, or so you're working with to make the whole buying process accessible for all?
For all, yeah. And then I work with the LGBTQ community. My son is gay. And so when he came out, that was just very easy for us because we were very inclusive, and that's how we were raised. So that was the easiest. So I see like my son struggles sometimes with being like excluded out of that thing. So for me, I think it's all about communication and about empathy and just being inclusiveness for me. And that's what like drives me.
So where you live now, is it Denver, Colorado? Is that that seems to me like it's a red state. Is that a red state?
We're blue.
You're blue. Oh,
yeah.
So you're an island.
Yeah. You're so we're, yeah. So he's very lucky to be in Colorado because it's a very, very, LGBTQ friendly state.
It's interesting. I'm actually doing a talk to a Rotary Club of Texas tonight. I was a bit concerned when I first got the call to do the talk, and I thought, "Oh, Texas, are they really going to be up for me?" You know, you never think. But I had a really great chat with this Rotarian, and it's a really interesting conversation. And it's so easy to judge people and assume that somebody's going to be anti you or against you or whatever it is. I think the media sometimes create this impression that it's not true.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what, I mean, I just saw my parents get judged all the time, and us too, as the kids, and even with my son and everything. And I just think that it's so easy to be, it's so easy to have people, I think, hate. And I just want people just to love. I think love is love no matter who you are. And I think that that's how, I think that if we all just come together and just know that all of us are the same, and we're just living our lives through the process, and all we want is to feel accepted.
Amen. Amen to that. Yeah, completely. So going back to supporting and championing, if you like, people who are deaf, hard of hearing, hearing impaired, what are the sort of basic tips that we can give to our listener out there who wants to find out more, who wants to maybe learn more about people who are deaf? Where's a good starting point? What's the key things that we should be leaving them with?
I think just trying, and then knowing there's a lot of places where you can learn the basic signs, like thank you or you're welcome. And it makes them feel so good. And I've seen this before where I'm at like a restaurant or whatever, and the waiter says thank you, like in sign language, and that means a lot to them. So just like the basic signs, the basic signs, I think, makes such a big difference just for them, just to feel like somebody is trying with them and someone is like trying to make them feel included. I think that's huge for everyone.
Yeah. Is it polite, for example, to tap someone gently on the shoulder or the elbow, just indicate you're trying to have a conversation? Is that rude or is that acceptable?
I do it all the time. I think lightly just tapping them so they know that you're there, because otherwise they're not going to know, or just turn and walk in front of them.
Yeah.
So they see you.
Getting their attention is perfectly valid. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So either, as you say, maneuver yourself, or a gentle touch on the shoulder or the elbow in a polite way to say, I'm here. Or...
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. Just maneuvers just so they can see you, or wave so they know that you're trying to get their attention.
Do people forget that the people you work with, your father, your mother, can't hear? Do they forget sometimes when they start having a conversation? They speak too quickly, or they just make an assumption that
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of times. And then I would have to tell them, oh, my mom can't hear or my dad can't hear. And then, yeah, because, and then they'll either start talking like louder, which does not help. And then I think that there's an assumption that all deaf and hard of hearing people can lip read, and not all of them can. I can, because I was taught that. But a lot of people, I think, assume that they can.
So, yeah, I've seen it. You know, it's when you talk to someone who has a different first language, you shout or you speak as if the other person is less intelligent sometimes, don't you? You assume that they can't be understood. So I've seen people do this, and it's very embarrassing to watch.
I know, and I've seen people do that too, because it's like I agree with you. They think that they're less intelligent, and they aren't. Like, they're just like everybody else, and I don't think anybody's smarter than another one. It's just a different way of learning in a different language.
Skills. Yeah. Different skills, different way. In fact, if anything, they've had to overcome more barriers in a hearing world to cope and adapt. They've
got exactly
more cognitive ability in that way.
Yeah. And yeah, because what I was saying earlier was like all of their senses like get heightened. So they're more aware of things, and they're more, I think, like not really knowledgeable, but like they, all this stuff like takes over. So I think that they assume things like that, but it's not the case.
What's something you wouldn't appreciate, you know, just without knowing somebody who's deaf? What's something that a joy of life that they have that maybe we hearing people don't have, that's part of their identity, part of their community, that we would be surprised about?
I would say they love music. Usually because they can feel the beat of like, so like every, yeah, yep, exactly. And so every time I have like my, I call it my uptown party. They always like dance. They always dance. They like, most of them love to dance because they can feel the beat. They can, I think they appreciate the music more and the actual like music part, because they're going off of feeling instead of hearing.
In our TV series, we call it Strictly Come Dancing. You call it Dancing with the Stars, I think, in the US. We had a deaf actress who was, took part in that show, I think it was last year or the year before, and she won the whole competition in the end. And it was it was really fascinating to watch her dance the set, knowing she was deaf, yet she was in perfect timing, and she was able to, but she could feel, as you say, she could feel the rhythm, and her partner developed cues, either tapping each other or grabbing it or squeezing, whatever it may be, to get that rhythm. And yeah, you're right. I've been to rock concerts. I've seen Meatloaf and other people have been down the front, and you can feel your chest vibrate and your whole body vibrate with the music, can't you?
Yeah, I think. And then I think that we sometimes may take that for granted, that we can hear the music, but them feeling the music, I think, gives them like, it's just a different sensory, I think. And so I can see that she won that. That's awesome, because she can feel everything, and that's when you know the beats, because you're actually feeling the beats instead of like hearing it.
I love that, feeling the music. That's a real superpower, that, be able to become really at one with that vibe, with that feeling.
Yeah,
it's like going to a club rave,
you feel appreciated. And
you really pump in those vibes, and your whole body is at one with that musical experience.
Exactly, it's like a meditation almost, because they're feeling it and it's different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's really, really give me a glow. That's fascinating. What else have you found in your life? Again, as a child growing up, that was either easier for you or harder for you? Being the primary interpreter must have been tricky, but there must have been a lot of joy there as well.
Yeah, I think, because I'm multi-language too, so I speak like two different languages, and I think it gave me better communication skills, because I know that I need to listen and have them feel seen and have like take my time to listen to them, know what they want. So I think that it gave me a better like understanding of people feeling left out, which is not what I ever want to do with anybody. So I've always been more, I've always had a bigger heart, because I've always thought that I don't want anybody hurting, and I don't want anybody feeling left out or made fun of, because I was growing up, growing up as a kid. So I would never want anybody to feel bad about their own selves. So for me, I think it gave me more of like a bigger heart, I think.
Has your son taken it upon himself to learn ASL as well? Is it kind of a family duty?
So, it's kind of funny because I had him take ASL in high school as one of his languages, thinking that I would help him and he can ace the tests and all that stuff. So I helped him, and he got straight A's throughout school, and he got flunked that test. He got one F. He was so mad at me because I was signing the way I learned, and I'm a CODA, so I'm fluent in sign language, but I didn't even realize that when you're actually taught, and the years later too, everything was so different being taught, like sign language, or going through the like proper sign language, going through the classes was completely different than how I was raised. And so he was like, thanks, Mom.
So the way you learn it today is not the way that the deaf community, if you like, have grown up with it. It's more conversational, more chatty, whereas when you're learning it, it's more structured, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Different. Like, and there's different signs for different words, because like favorite, I was like, this is favorite. And I was taught favorite. And so, and like birthday was birthday, but now it's like birthday. So there's different signs for different things. It's kind of like slang. And so the way we were taught was just growing up, like it wasn't proper like ASL. So it was completely different when I was doing it with him than it was when I learned.
So it's become more formalized over the generations, and it's become a standard throughout the country, whereas you said before there was more dialects and local regional variations. It's now trying to got a core structure.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and there's different types of sign too, like ASL, which what I do, and there's like, I think there's EEL or E or C S E E too. So there's different types of sign, like slang words. And so there's different types of, like dialect and things like that. There's actually different types of that within sign language.
So it's a bit like a driving test. You have you learn to drive and pass your test with the instructor. And then when you pass your test, you drive completely differently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you bypass everything you learned.
Yeah. You almost stop at the stop sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And you turn right sometimes even when you're not supposed to on the red. It's
yeah.
You get exactly. In the habit. And you never drive at 55 miles an hour, do you? You always go at
never.
No. Unless there's someone with a speed gun down the road pointing it at you.
Yeah, exactly.
I never thought of it that way. As you said, you didn't think of it either. You just assumed that.
I just assumed. Yeah. And then I thought I did so well. Like, I literally thought he was going to come home and have an A, and he's.
But he can sign fluently to your parents, I guess.
He cannot. No, Jordan was learning. My oldest was learning sign language. And then my mom passed away when Jordan was 9. And so she forgot a lot of the sign. And then with him, I never really taught him how to sign, and I should have, but we're teaching the grandbaby how to sign, so hopefully she'll learn.
So you'll pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of cute to see, like, because she's only a year and a half old, but it's so cute to see baby sign. And it's easier for them too to learn the signs than it is to use her voice at that age too. So she was signing like milk and more and all that stuff before she was even talking.
I'm thinking about that movie. Was it Meet the Fockers, where they're signing for milk and all those things? And yeah. It's critically signed for things. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, poop and milk and
it's funny. But it's a lot easier to teach babies to sign. It's a lot. I don't know if I would. I'm so glad that I'm a CODA and learned that ASL was my first language, but I couldn't even imagine being an adult or older learning how to sign. And like, it's because for me, it's my normal because I was raised like that. But I know a lot of people who went and took classes, and they're like, ASL is like really hard to learn. And then seeing him go through that, I was like, oh, that actually is completely different. That'd be hard.
I guess it's like any language. If you're with people who are using that language all the time, you pick up one word here and one word there, and it becomes, you learn to structure your sentences as you do it. Whereas if you're trying to learn it as a textbook without the context, it's always harder, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I have a lot of good friends who are deaf and hard of hearing and in that world. And I feel it always is more comfortable for me to be in an environment with the deaf culture, because that's what I was raised in. And I always feel more comfortable in that environment. And I've always stuttered as a kid. So I had to go to speech therapy and all that stuff for stuttering. But I don't stutter when I sign, like, at all. It's just when I speak. So it's kind of ironic.
Yeah. My own experience of losing hearing is, well, for myself, about 10, 15 years or thereabouts, I had a viral infection in my inner ear. And all of a sudden I woke up one day, I couldn't hear much. I could hear a little bit, but it was like a real cloudy, muffled, sort of really strange, sort of echoey noise in my head. And everything was like, I was underwater all the time. And I went to the doctor, and the doctor just basically said, it's a virus. One day it will clear up. Maybe. And I was like, how long? He went, don't know, 6, 12 weeks, maybe. See? It's just disappeared. So it was over Christmas one year. And I remember our children came round and we were watching TV, and I had to have the subtitles on. I had to have the telly loud. And they were talking to me, and I go, I can't hear you. And it was a real wake-up call to what it's like to not hear. You're in a little bubble. The world seems very isolated. And then one day I woke up and it was back. It was like, well, as fast as it went, it reappeared. And it was a really strange feeling, but it gave me an appreciation. And my father, who passed away this year, he was pretty deaf. You know, he could wear hearing aids, but he was very hard of hearing. He worked on ships in the Navy, and he used to work on the guns. We think that the constant firing of the guns damages hearing. Yeah. And my father-in-law, he's also pretty deaf and has hearing aids. And even with the hearing aids, it's hard sometimes to communicate with him. So I now live in a world with two elderly parents who are pretty deaf. My mum's has hearing aids. She's pretty good at hearing, but she's still got some impairment. And I've got some friends now. You know, I'm in my 60s. I've got friends who are about my age, and we go for a couple of drinks in the evening, and they say, oh, could you sit on my left-hand side? Because I can only hear in that ear. I can't hear in the other ear. And you start becoming appreciative. And I think I read a stat once that 1 in 6 of us will lose our hearing to an extent where I think when you lose 80% or something, you become deaf by classification. So 1 in 6 of us will happen to by our mid-50s, early 60s. You think, wow, that's a lot of population.
Yeah, it's a lot. And that's what I think that we take a lot of things for granted. And hearing, I think, is one of them for sure. We don't realize like what we can have, even with like the blind too. Like we take our vision and our hearing for granted. So I think just like including people and knowing that later on in life, they may not have their hearing. And so I think that's where you want to make people feel like be inclusive and not isolated, because it is an isolating feeling that you can't hear. Like all of a sudden you can hear and then you can't. Then it like, I think it makes them feel like overlooked or misunderstood. So I think that just finding where they fit in, I think, is what.
Yeah.
Just making people in general fit in, I think, is just really big. And I think that's why I also wrote the book, because it has other stuff in there, not just for the deaf and hard of hearing community. It's just all about inclusion and being inclusive and awareness. Because we are, like you're saying, 1 in 6, that's huge. Like we're going to be losing our hearing. Or even if we lose our sight too, because that goes down, I'm going to start needing glasses soon.
Oh, yeah, I've been wearing very focals for 30, 40 years, you know, and I noticed my distance vision, it's almost getting worse every year now. And I've got, I think, is it glaucoma or cataracts or something? I've got something developing that is accelerating the degeneration of my left eye slightly. So every year it's getting worse. I think eventually I'll probably need laser or something on it. But yeah, it's, you get past 50 and things start breaking or shutting down, or we forget, you know, it's easy. You know, when you're 20 years old, you're invincible. And if you've never had a childhood problem, then you get to your 20s, you just think the world is easy. And then all of a sudden you break your leg skiing, or you injure your knee playing football, or you do this, whatever your sport you're playing. And suddenly you realize, hang on a minute, my body is starting to fall apart here and it aches. And yeah. You get to your 50s, and it creaks when you stand in it, get up for a chair, and you can't quite walk as far as you used to. Yeah. So I think we need to be more aware when we're younger about creating accessible and inclusive spaces, because that'll be us in not too distant future.
Yeah, exactly.
Very realistic. In 10 years' time, I'm going to be less able than I am today, no matter how much exercise I do and try and keep fit and active. Something's going to stop working.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that when we're young, we definitely take our youth for granted, for sure, because we don't realize, like, I think that we always see, because we saw our parents grow up, and that, well, my mom passed away in her 40s, but we saw them like get older and older, and we always thought like they were older, but now we're their age, and we're like, but when we're kids, so I think that even as kids and as youths, we take like your aging for granted. Like you don't realize, like, I'm going to be there someday.
Your dad must have taken it pretty hard when your mom passed away, because I'm guessing they were soulmates, as being so tightly linked together, being both deaf.
Yeah. They were married for 32 years, or they were together for 32 years before my mom passed away. And then, my mom was like 49, and then my dad was like 52. And then he got married 6 months later to Dixie. And she was in my life more obviously than my mom, because my mom had passed away. Cause when we're kids, we don't really remember them. And so Dixie, I think my dad got a second chance. I always thought that my mom brought Dixie to my dad, because I think my dad would have been, he wouldn't have known to be alone, because he was with my mom since they were like 18 or 17 years old. Yeah. And so I think that, and then my dad ended up passing away just 2 years ago of the same cancer too, which is unusual. So 24 years, they had melanoma, both of them. And so 24 years later, my dad got it.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. But
Is Dixie deaf as well?
Yeah.
She is.
Yeah, she is, yeah. And so
he deaf had a second soulmate who was also deaf as well, which is, yeah, I guess that's a beautiful story as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I still talk to Dixie to this day. She's always been really sweet. I think that my dad would have been, I think, very lonely and lost, like you were saying, without my mom. So I've always been thankful that he found Dixie.
So melanoma, it's a skin cancer, is that right?
Yeah, it's the skin cancer, yeah. So my mom had it internally behind her eye from not wearing sunglasses, which I never knew that happens. Yeah, and then my dad had it on the back of his head.
Yeah, I think my dad had a, because my dad lost a lot of his hair, and he had a sort of developer on top of his head, and also a lump on the back of his neck. But he was so old, he passed away when he was 92. So there was no point doing anything about it. It was just some radiography to sort it out. But
yeah, my dad was in his early 70s. He was still young. My mom was obviously younger, but my dad was still in his early 70s.
Well, he had a good life.
Yeah, exactly. And he had a second chance at life, which is good.
And he did, yeah. That's the important thing. It's not about forgetting your first love, it's about continuing your life as well. You know, I often said this to my wife, and my wife's just around the corner. You know, I wouldn't expect her to mourn for me for the rest of her life. She's entitled to find a second love, and I would wish her well. She wanted to. You know, you don't want to hold somebody to in your legacy for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. No, I agree.
It goes through a period of reflection and mourning. Life is for living.
Yeah, exactly. And I think everybody goes through stages of life as well.
So how can people get hold of you? What's the best way of tracking you down these days?
So I have an Instagram and it's Gallucci Homes. And then my website is GallucciHomes.com. And then the book is RaisedInSilence.com.
And Gallucci is GALLUCCI, for those of you who are not Italian in your pronunciation and spelling. So give me something profound to finish on.
I think the main thing is to just have connection, like try to communicate and have connection with people, and then always just try with people.
Try. Yeah. Because the fear of getting it wrong is quite powerful sometimes, isn't it? We worry about saying something in case we get it wrong or mess up or you say,
exactly.
Just try.
Yeah. And no one's perfect, but as long as you try, you've made an effort.
Yeah. Because by not trying, you're excluding. So giving it a go, trying, being brave. Maria, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I've loved our conversation.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.